The Dark Web Files. Exposing the internet's hidden underbelly.
What if I told you that the biggest streaming service in the world isn't Netflix or Disney Plus or Amazon Prime? What if I told you it has more content than all of them combined, costs next to nothing, and operates completely in the shadows?
And that every time you hear about a new blockbuster release or a must-see series finale, it's already playing there, instantly, for an audience of millions that the industry pretends doesn't exist.
This is the story of the invisible broadcast. Today, we're pulling back the curtain on a clandestine, multi-billion-dollar empire that runs parallel to the streaming industry we all know. We're talking about the dark web.
You know, Mark, this topic, it hits close to home for me. I spend my life in writers' rooms, on sets, watching creators pour years of their lives into a single project. The idea that this work is being siphoned off and consumed in this shadow economy, it's more than just a financial issue.
For me, it's the sheer scale and sophistication of it. We think of streaming as this seamless, magical thing. You press a button, a movie appears. But behind that button is a global infrastructure of servers, CDNs, and massive corporations. And what we've discovered is that there's another infrastructure, just as complex, just as global, built to mirror it, to intercept it, and to broadcast it from the darkest corners of the internet.
It's a high-tech cat-and-mouse game being played for the biggest prize in modern entertainment. And the more we dug into it, the more we realize how little is truly understood about who's running these networks and what the real cost is.
We've spent months speaking with cybersecurity experts who are on the front lines of this fight. We even managed to track down former insiders, people who built and profited from these illegal platforms.
And what they told us is, frankly, staggering. It goes so much deeper than just pirated movies. So the question we're asking today is, what really happens when the world's biggest entertainment revolution meets the internet's most lawless frontier?
So let's start with the fundamental problem they had to solve. How do you broadcast a high-definition video stream to, say, a million people simultaneously without the resources of a Netflix or a YouTube? You can't just have one server sending out a million separate copies. The cost would be astronomical.
Right. It would melt. So what's the workaround? How do they build this phantom network?
They turn the audience into the broadcast station. It's a principle that's been around for a while in things like peer-to-peer file sharing, but they've perfected it for live video.
So, if I'm watching, my computer is also sending the stream to someone else watching?
Exactly. Each viewer becomes a tiny node in the network, a microserver. Instead of one central server struggling to send the stream to a million people, it sends it to maybe a few hundred. And then they send it to a few hundred more, and so on. It's an exponential cascade.
That's incredibly sophisticated. It's parasitic in a way. It uses the very infrastructure of the internet against itself.
It's more than that. One of the cybersecurity analysts we spoke to, a woman who tracks these networks for a living, she called it a hydra. You cut off one server, one head, and the network just reroutes. The stream doesn't even stutter. Because the source is everywhere and nowhere at the same time.
And this is where we get to the people behind it. Because a system that complex doesn't just appear out of nowhere. It has to be built and maintained.
Right. And the first insider we managed to connect with, he wasn't what I expected. He wasn't some shadowy hacker in a hoodie. He was a network architect. He used to design content delivery networks, CDNs, for legitimate tech companies.
I remember that call. He talked about it like he was solving an engineering puzzle. There was this pride in his voice. He described the challenge of balancing server loads and minimizing latency with this genuine passion.
He told us, look, the problem is inefficient distribution. A studio spends $100 million on marketing to get everyone to want to see the same thing at the same time. But they put it behind a dozen different paywalls and geographical locks. That's not a moral problem. That's a design flaw.
A design flaw? My God. The complete and utter detachment from the art, from the work. To him, a $300 million movie is just an inefficiently delivered data packet.
He saw himself as making it more efficient. He said his network delivered a better, more stable stream with less buffering than many of the paid services he was pirating from. And he wasn't wrong.
And that's the terrifying part, isn't it? The idea that the black market version could actually be a superior product. It's not grainy camcorder footage from the back of a theater anymore.
Oh, not even close. We're talking pristine, 4K Dolby Atmos streams, often sourced directly from compromised digital screeners or hacked streaming service servers before the official release. They're not stealing a copy. They're tapping directly into the main line.
So they're not just pirates. They're becoming a parallel, a more ruthlessly efficient broadcast system. One with no rules, no borders, and it seems, no conscience.
And that's the question, isn't it? Is it a lack of conscience? Or is it a completely different moral framework? When we press that network architect on the morality of it, on the theft, he couldn't see it. He kept repeating, information wants to be free. I'm just removing the friction.
Removing the friction? That is the most sanitized, emotionally vacant justification I have ever heard. He's talking about the work of thousands of people. Artists, technicians, writers, my friends. And he calls it friction?
To him, it is. It's an obstacle in a data flow diagram. But here's where it gets, well, even darker. This whole operation, this friction removal service, it's not a public service. It's not some Robin Hood-esque crusade. It's a machine for making money.
Okay, so that's the part I don't get. If the streams are free for the end user, where is the multi-billion-dollar empire? Who is paying for all this?
Well, the most visible layer is advertising.
But it's not the kind of advertising you see on legitimate sites. We're talking about the absolute bottom of the barrel. Pop-up ads for gambling sites, malware, phishing scams, anything that's been banned from the legitimate internet finds a home there.
So, the price of admission is exposing yourself to the digital sewer, basically.
That's just the start. One of the cybersecurity guys we spoke to, he put it perfectly. He said, the pirated movie isn't the product. The movie is the bait. You are the product.
What does that mean? They're mining data from the people watching?
Everything. Think about it. To use these services, you often have to download their custom software, a special media player, or a browser plugin. That software doesn't just play video. It can log your keystrokes. It can scan your hard drive. It can hijack your processor to mine cryptocurrency.
Oh my God. So the audience isn't just part of the broadcast network. They're unknowingly powering it with their own computers and handing over their personal data in the process?
Their computer becomes another node in a completely different kind of network, a botnet. The expert we talked to, he tracked a single pirated stream of a major sporting event. He found that the software being used by the viewers was also participating in a massive DDoS attack, a distributed denial of service against a financial institution on another continent.
Wait, so while someone is sitting on their couch watching a soccer game, their laptop is, what, part of an international cybercrime syndicate attacking a bank?
Without them ever knowing, the processing power required is minimal. A tiny fraction from a million different computers. And you have a supercomputer. One that can be rented out to the highest bidder for whatever purpose they want.
This is so much bigger than stealing movies. The piracy is just a front. It's a recruitment drive for a digital ghost army.
A ghost army. That's exactly what it is. And it's funded by our desire for convenience, for free stuff. It reframes that whole conversation with the architect, doesn't it? His obsession with removing friction.
It makes it so much more sinister. He wasn't just building a more efficient delivery system for movies. He was building the most efficient recruitment system for a botnet that the world has ever seen.
And the genius of it, the truly diabolical part, is that the recruits don't even know they've been conscripted. They think they're just watching a TV show. It's the perfect crime, hiding in plain sight, disguised as the one thing we all want.
You know, as we've gone through all this, I keep coming back to the human element. I started this thinking about the writers, the actors, the crews, the people whose work is being stolen. But now, I'm thinking about the audience. Millions of people who are not just complicit, but are actively being turned into victims themselves. Their privacy, their security, their own computers turned against them.
For the illusion of getting something for nothing. I think, for me, the biggest takeaway is the sheer sophistication of the parallel structure. We think of the internet as having gatekeepers. Google, the ISPs, the big platforms. But this invisible broadcast, it has found the cracks. It operates in the seams of the legitimate world. It's a perfect, self-sustaining, parasitic ecosystem.
So, is there any way to fight it? I mean, if it's a hydra, like your analyst said, what can anyone even do?
That's the billion-dollar question, isn't it? The experts we talked to, they weren't optimistic. It's not a war you can win with takedown notices and lawsuits. It's a technological arms race. And the pirates, the operators of this ghost army, they have no rules, no bureaucracy. They can adapt faster than any corporation or government can.
So it just continues? This shadow industry just keeps growing, feeding on the real one, and we're all just along for the ride?
For now, it seems that way. The best they can do is fight skirmishes, shut down a server here, seize a domain there, but the network itself, it just reroutes, it heals. Maybe the only real defense is awareness.
The knowledge that nothing is truly free. That when you step into that world, the price of admission might be far higher than you could ever imagine. It's a sobering thought to end on.
It is, and it's a story that is far from over. We've been investigating the invisible broadcast. Thank you for joining us on this journey into the shadows.
We hope it's given you something to think about. The next time you press play, maybe just pause for a second and wonder who else is watching and what they really want from you. Stay safe out there.